when I first started, it was all me trying looking for deals on MLS. I look on InvestorLift. That's another decent place to look for deals. But now as I buy more, people start to recognize that you're buying properties. You know, people know that you're buying properties and deals start coming to you the further you go along.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor!
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 Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. So glad that you're here. This episode was so much fun to record. It was with my friend, Dr. Tom Lowe. He's a radiologist in a private practice in South Bend, Indiana. He's also married with two kids, and he has just really taken off in his real estate journey. This one is a fantastic episode if you're looking for some tips for getting started, some guidance for beginners, particularly in single family rentals. And if you're a busy physician like Tom, and you're trying to figure out, hey, how can I invest in real estate? How can I get started? This is the episode for you. We kind of go soup to nuts on how you can find deals and rehab these deals and turn them into fantastic rental properties and how you can do that while you're a busy physician. We talk about some other ways that can be beneficial from a time management perspective. And we talk a lot about the return on time. Basically, what is your time worth? What is each hour of your time worth? And how can you leverage that time to become more successful in real estate and spend more time with your family and doing things that you love? This was a really fun episode to record. If you gain some knowledge or some insight from this episode, please share this podcast with someone that you think will benefit from it. We really appreciate it. Without further ado, let's get started with this episode with Dr. Tom Lowe. Dr. Tom Lowe, happy to have you on the podcast. How are things going?
Going good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for waking up early on a Sunday morning to have this conversation. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, if you don't mind, just kind of get started and get to know you a little bit. So if you don't mind just kind of introducing yourself, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Tom Lowe, a physician, radiologist. I work in private practice here in South Bend, Indiana. See, I'm 35. And yeah, got into real estate about 3 years ago. So two kids and a wife. My wife's an anesthesiologist, so extremely busy. I know you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. But what drew you guys to investing in real estate?
Yeah, for me, I think it started with investing. When I graduated residency, you start making money for the first time in your life. And I started, I'm like, all right, well, what am I going to do with this money? So first things first, we paid off the loans. And then I started reading about investing, started on the White Coat Investor. That's where I got my start. Yeah. And then from there, they talked about diversification, right? That's where I learned about diversification. So I was like, yeah, I got to jump into real estate. You have the stocks, bonds, real estate. And so I had to hit all three. And that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to start looking at real estate investing. And so that's how I got there.
That's cool. Has it been worthwhile for you to get into real estate?
I definitely. It's been enjoyable. The returns so far have been good. I do expect to live through a downturn, but yeah, so far it's definitely been worthwhile, I would say. Yeah.
That's awesome. What was that transition like for you coming out of residency and really start making money? As you said, what was that transition for you? Was it difficult? Did you kind of have that lifestyle creep that is pretty evident, or at least feel the pressure of becoming a doctor now and attending and now making good income?
The lifestyle creep's always a problem, isn't it? Yeah. I think I've fought it pretty well, but it was a big jump, right? I mean, my wife's an anesthesiologist. I work in private practice grads. So you go from making very little to quite a bit, right? All of a sudden, and we extra maybe 20,000 every month sometimes to invest, and you got to figure out what to do with it. And we've basically just gone nearly 50-50 stocks, real estate, and that's how we've done it. Yeah, it's worked out pretty well for us so far.
That's awesome. Yeah, trying to avoid the lifestyle creep is difficult. I laugh almost every time I pull into the parking lot. I'm a family med doc, so I make a little bit of money, but family med doc in the Air Force, so that's even less. But I pull into the clinic every day, and I drive a 2011 Volkswagen Jetta, and the pharmacy tech drives a brand new Tesla. And so it's really interesting. All the providers that work in the clinic, we all have like the crappiest cars. It's hilarious. Yeah. And mine looks even crappier now. We just got a big hailstorm yesterday. And so now I got a bunch of hail dings in it too. So
yeah,
no one's guessing that the doc's driving the 2011 hail dinged up Volkswagen Jetta, but hey, yeah. That's not my priority there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Boys, is the wife, is she on board investing in real estate as well? Do you guys kind of invest together?
Slowly but surely, she's getting on board. It was definitely kind of me who brought it to the table and was like, hey, we should invest in real estate. And she was certainly skeptical at first, rightfully so. It was like a radiologist all of a sudden dives into real estate investing. And she was like, are you sure you want to do this? And we've been doing it for about 3 years and she's come along over the 3 years. And yeah, I think she had to see that it was going to be successful before she was going to totally buy in. So yeah, she's on board now.
That's good. Yeah, it took a little bit as well for me to get the wife on board. She's really big into design and photography and so forth. So that's the Airbnb pivot a little bit was helpful for us because then she got to design the properties and photograph them and she really enjoyed that as well. But having the spouse on board and invest in real estate is so helpful and important because then they're typically okay with doing things like this podcast on a Sunday morning and those sorts of things as well. So it can be beneficial. What's the real estate portfolio look like for you guys right now, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. So right now we've got 5 properties. It's 4 single family homes and 1 duplex. So 6 nice. Units total. And I'm actually in the middle of doing a deal right now that kind of came to me last week, which is hopefully going to be subject to. Which is a whole can of worms to get into, I'm realizing, but the returns on it are potentially going to be great. So looking at my next one currently, yeah.
That's awesome. What's, for folks who aren't familiar with Subject 2, what's kind of the broad overview of Subject 2 and finance, creative financing?
Yeah, so, yeah, and I'm learning too, right? I'm delving into it currently. But Subject 2 is you're purchasing the home subject to the mortgage. So essentially you just take over their mortgage payments and that's how you acquire the property, which is fantastic because I'm looking at a zero money down situation. I'm literally just going to take over his payments on his home. And he has currently his loan is set up as a 4.5% interest rate.
Wow.
So yeah, so I'm really excited about this one. Just take that over and start making his payments and it's going to be a strong rental.
That's awesome. Yeah, folks who are listening, Pace Morby's all in that space and a great educator. And you can certainly learn a lot. He just came out with a book. What is it? Wealth Without Cash, I think, by him. Yeah. That's all about creative financing. It's sitting on my bedside table. I need to read it. I know it's going to worsen my shiny object syndrome though. So I've been putting it off a little bit, but I've heard nothing but good things about that book. And Pace seems like a great guy.
Yeah. And I did the exact same thing. I bought Wealth Without Cash probably 3 months ago, never touched it. And literally when this deal fell on my lap, I'm like, okay, I got to read it. So Friday, I worked from 3 to 10 p.m. So I woke up at 7 a.m. Friday and read pretty much the whole book, 7 a.m. to like 2 p.m., read the whole thing. And and that's just how the deals have gone for me. I'm sure you've been the same way as a physician. You're so busy and you have to learn as you go, like most investors, and find the time when you can to read about it. Yeah. I knew the premises of Subject 2, but I had no idea how to execute a subject to deal. And so now I'm literally in the process of learning it as I'm doing this deal. And that's just how I've had to do it, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Well, and we're so lucky that we live in a time when there's so much information available and we can quickly access it and get into the brains of Pace Morby by reading his book and learn so much about this in a short period of time. And yeah, really cool. And what a cool way to get into a deal with no money down, so you're not tapping into savings or anything else, and an incredible interest rate at the time that we're recording this in August 2023. A 4.5% interest rate would be a welcome surprise for me at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, it's everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. What's the deal look like? Is a single family house for you?
Yeah, single family home. It's actually like an A-class home, which I tend to stay away from just because, here in Indiana, the prices are a little bit lower. Obviously, where you're at. So this A-class home, the purchase price would be around $350.
Okay.
And the rents in my area are strong, but if you're trying to get to the 1% rule, right, like $3,500, it's just not realistic. So if I were to buy it with an 8% interest loan, it'd never work. But at 4.5%, purchase price $350. I'm looking at rent of about $2,900. So I think his total payment right now is $2,150. So after you account for CapEx and vacancy and all that stuff, I'm looking at about $300 a month positive cash flow, hopefully is kind of what I'm thinking.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But without that interest rate, it would never work, right?
Well, in that $300 per month is on no money down, which is incredible. So infinite return for that. yes. deal, which is amazing. Well, that's exciting. Going back to the start there for you. So for your first initial rental property, what was that like getting started? The fears that you had, like just to walk us through that, like how was it just getting that first deal done?
Yeah, of course, it's always scary, right? Delving into a space where you're pretty uneducated and uncertain. And for doctors, I think what my problem was, and I think a lot of doctors struggle with is time. Most real estate investors, I think they have time, but not money. In physicians, I think it's the opposite. Like we have the capital to invest, but just not the time. So it's hard not, you don't want to make mistakes. If you go too quickly, you can make mistakes. And so I was pretty careful on the first one. I read about real estate for a year, certainly before ever buying the first property. Podcasts, reading, I'm on all the Facebook groups. I was there present for a year before I landed my first deal. My first deal came through Facebook, actually. I was on the MLS 24/7. I don't know if you start on the MLS, but that's where I'm always looking. All those deals are market price, right? And you want to get a deal. So I found my first one on Facebook, which is like totally unconventional, right? But it's for sale by owner. I bought it for $47,000 off Facebook. The properties out here are cheap.
So, yeah, that's awesome.
I bought it for $47,000. It's a 2-bed, 1-bath rental. A landlord, his prior tenant just destroyed it. And he was not looking to do, he's like, I'm done. I'm getting out. So bought it for $47,000, put about $30,000 into it. So put me in about $77,000, $80,000 was kind of my all in. And it appraised for $119,000. So I did the burr, the refinancing, that money back out. Facebook, man. I mean, it's rare. There's not a lot of good deals on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I came across kind of a little bit of a gem for sale by owner, and it worked out fine. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it worked out great for sure. And I'm sure you learned so much doing that first deal and so much about the burr process as well. Is that how you guys continued to grow your portfolio, was kind of burring these properties?
That was the intention to burr. And that was our only burr, though, to this point. And the problem was the rising interest rates just kept, I guess I missed out, right? The next property, the interest rate rose by a whole percentage point. And at the time I was thinking, oh, it's too high. But then, of course, that interest rate just kept climbing. And then I regretted not pulling the money out of the next property. But so the next property I bought all cash and just never completed that last step, that refinance step. So I've only done one burr to this point, just because I haven't done the last step on a couple of properties, the refinance.
Hey, you're just waiting for it. Yeah, the rates are going to go back down at some point, I think. I don't think they're going to stick where they are now. Yeah, well, and then just how rapid the rates rose was just so difficult for folks. Yeah. And we were in the middle of a deal as well. And we underwrote the deal at interest rate, I think, of like 4.5 at the time. And that was high at the time. And then by the time we did all the due diligence and everything else was on a commercial property, then we were looking at 6.5-7%. And we're like, this just isn't going to work anymore. Like just destroyed the cash flow for us. So it happens, and real estate's fluid, and luckily it's cyclical. So it'll likely go back down in the future, and you'll be in a great position to go ahead and burn them. I think the other thing too, I was thinking about with your story too, is I think a lot of times folks think they have to burn out or refinance out all the money they put into it in order for it to be a good deal. But I don't think that's necessarily the case, especially now too. If you refinance and get a portion of your money out, that's still fantastic. You still have a cash flowing rental property, I'm sure.
Yeah, it goes back to what we talked about for doctors too. I mean, I think for your common real estate investor, like to leave $10,000 in a deal can be devastating for your average person. But for a doctor, you don't want to do it. But hey, it's not as much money maybe to a physician as it would be to someone else.
Yeah, we're fortunate to have a little bit higher income potential than most, which is fantastic. For the first burr, what were some lessons that you learned with that? Was that the first time really managing some contractors and service providers and so forth?
It was, yeah. Everybody talks about downfalls that they have doing real estate, and I've had plenty. I would say one area that I've gotten lucky on is contractors. I've been so lucky in that. Good. I've used two so far in they've been good. Stand-up people. They've been honest. They did good work at a fair price. So that's what I got lucky about, I'll say. My first burr, I think everybody, this may happen to, but is things you didn't account for in your initial. I was hoping to get away with $25,000 in renovations. And of course, it came out to be a little over $30,000. And so I'm $7,000 over my initial estimate. We got into the house and I always try to do my due diligence and check off, look at electric, look at foundation, all the major things. And of course, when I got in there, there was termite damage in the back wall that, of course, me as an untrained physician didn't recognize. So that was, I mean, luckily it was only about an additional like $3,000, thankfully, but you know, didn't account for that. The HVAC broke first year. So it's a tiny house. I think it landed about $5,000. So in unexpected, maybe I looked at the HVAC, I think it was only 10 years old, but completely unexpected. It just went out. And yeah, you encounter things that you just got to take it in stride. So yeah, if I had a lesson, it'd be really get in there and do the checklist and be careful about the major items. Foundation, electric, HVAC. Really take a look at all those major items. Roof. I would even write it down. I've started bringing a notebook out when I go to places and check it off for sure, because I can really change your whole deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, having a contractor walk through the home as well as kind of another set of eyes can be beneficial and kind of give you an idea what the renovation costs will look like. And we've had some home inspections that were done in the home inspection paperwork, and the inspector gave the home a way better bill of health than what it actually was. And one of the homes we bought was a short-term rental in Georgia, and the inspection looked fantastic. And we go to this house the first day we close. This is our first time seeing it in person, actually. We used a fantastic realtor out there who walked the property, and we got multiple inspections. We had a handyman go through, all kinds of stuff. And we walk in, and there's just water, standing water in the basement. And we're like, and there was no mention of any water damage in the past, but there was very clearly like there had been water damage multiple times beforehand. And you just never know what you're going to get into sometimes. But I think you make a great point. Really important to know the state of the CapEx expenditures and the big CapEx items, because especially for single family homes too, like if the HVAC goes out and you're spending $5,000 to fix that, that's probably close to your cash flow for the whole year. And so really important to make sure that those things are in good shape getting into the home, or if you're renovating it, of course. But yeah, that can really eat into your cash flow.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that was a successful deal for you. How easy was it then to get into the next deal and the next deal? Did you experience that snowball effect or the stack that we hear a lot about?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely convinced my wife that we could do another one. My poor wife, she gets bonuses every 6 months, and I take that and put it into real estate.
That's awesome.
Feel bad for her. But yeah, my wife bought in a little bit, and it seems like as time goes on, it gets maybe a little bit easier, particularly finding deals. When I first started, it was all me looking for deals on MLS. I look on Investor Lift. That's another decent place to look for deals. But now as I buy more, people start to recognize that you're buying properties. Now people know that you're buying properties, and deals start coming to you the further you go along. And that's how this last one came to us. One of the CRNAs in my wife's group is leaving, and he's looking at selling his home. But if he sells with commissions, he's going to lose about $15,000. Oh, and of course, that's how the subject too came in. Yeah. If I just take over his payments, he can not lose any money and leave. So yeah, the deals, it does get easier, right? The things start flowing to you. We used to get a little bit more comfortable with buying, with throwing that $100,000, you know, or whatever you're putting down. You get a little bit more comfortable with all that. So yeah, I bought, let's see, three deals in the last, or two and looking at another one. So three deals basically in the last 6 months. So it does, yeah. Just to your point, and I went like a whole year without doing anything, and then all of a sudden things just started rapidly progressing. And yeah, so definitely a snowball effect, I think. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you did it right too. I mean, you spent plenty of time educating yourself and getting that education piece that probably made you feel more comfortable getting into that first deal and subsequent deals down the road. And I know, like you said, you've learned a lot through each deal. Then now you're at the point where things are smooth for you and what you're looking for, and you're just getting it done. So that's awesome. I think the piece that trips a lot of people up is they get so focused on that education piece that they spend all their time going down the different rabbit holes of real estate education and asset classes, and they don't just take action. And you're a clear example that taking action, getting that first deal, then leads to just quicker lead time to the next one and the next one and the next one, and just continue stacking those deals. So it's inspiring. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So the duplex, how'd you find that?
Yeah, so I found that one on Investor Lift. And for anyone's not familiar, it's Investor Lift. And it's pretty good. It's where a lot of wholesalers go to put their deals. And that's where I found it. And yeah, believe it or not, I bought it sight unseen, which is a pretty big risk.
Yeah.
But I will say location was key. I live in South Bend, which is Notre Dame. It was kind of is the university here. And that's a hot area to buy properties. And so it was right next to Notre Dame. So the purchase price was $78,000. And I'm looking, my appraisal is I'm hoping to get $250,000 for it. Yeah. And so that margin between $78,000 and $250,000, I felt comfortable buying it sight unseen, even though it was a wreck. It was decrepit, the duplex that I bought. It had every single issue that you could imagine. The electric was knob and tube. So it had to be up there. It had foundational issues, which still to this day makes me nervous. But yeah, the margin was high enough, 78 to hopeful 250. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to pull the trigger and buy this. And yeah, so.
That's awesome. How are the renovations going for that so far?
It was a process, man. It took 6 months, the whole renovation, and we're at $100,000 into it. The whole thing had to be redone from top to bottom. So my all-in somewhere around about 190 right now currently.
Okay.
And so, yeah, and I'm hoping the appraisal will come back 250. We just finished it last week, 6 months. There are renters in it, but the exterior had to be redone before I'm going to get this appraisal. And yeah, it was a process, man, 6 months. But my contractor, he's a great guy, does good work, not very timely. Timeliness isn't his thing, but I think all contractors suffer from that. But yeah, within the next couple of weeks, I'm hoping to get it appraised.
That's exciting. Is this the same contractor team that you used for the first house?
No, it's a different guy. And actually what's weird is my first contractor was fine. But this guy kind of came into my life. He painted our primary home. And so my next contractor, I used him. His pricing was a little bit better. So it's a little bit of rip jumping to a new contractor just for better pricing. But yeah, he's been fantastic. And yeah, if you're looking for contractors, I mean, the referrals are key. And I would recommend going to the local, like RIA. I mean, that's the best place to find a contractor for a good price. You can't do the standard go to Lowe's and get their contractors because they're just so wildly expensive.
Yeah.
My parents redid their bathroom and they live in a nice house, A-class home, and they redid their 400 square foot bathroom or even less, probably 200 square foot bathroom when it was $50,000.
Oh, you know? Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the difference. My contractor, I guarantee if he went down there and did that bathroom, he'd do a good job. I bet you he'd charge $12,000.
Yeah. It's worth shopping around and getting some different quotes. That's for sure. And once you find a good contractor, treat them like gold and hold on to them because they're such a valuable asset to have. So sounds like you've gotten lucky a couple times now with contractors.
Yes. Yeah, literally. I always say that because everybody tells their horror stories of contractors and I've been lucky.
Good. Well, I hope the luck continues. Go Irish too.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So South Bend, it's a big cash flow market, I think, from what I've read. I'm not too familiar with Indiana, but I know Midwest tends to be more of a cash flow play. Do you have any specific numbers that you're looking at for a deal or kind of what's your buy box look like? I'm sure it's very deal dependent, but.
Yeah. No, you nailed it on the head. South Bend's pretty much a cash flow market. And not to say that there's no appreciation here because there is. It's just not like you're California, right? But yeah, I mean, if I'm looking at a deal, and again, I've analyzed so many deals that you get better at it. And you can, now I'm at the point where I know my market well enough that I can just look at a purchase price. And if I know the area, I know the rent, and I can know almost instantly if it's a good deal just because I've been in my area perusing for so long. But I always use the 1% rule right off the bat. And I know that's like fading quickly, right? With the interest rates changing and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, 1% immediately, if the purchase price is $200,000, I'm going to look, can I get $2,000? And if the rent's $1,200, you immediately know, no, not going to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And luckily in South Bend, Indiana, the cash flow, it is the second highest rent to price kind of ratio in Indiana behind Indianapolis. You would never expect it. I mean, when I first started investing in real estate, I thought, no way would I invest in South Bend, Indiana. But oddly enough, I mean, it's a hot market. And I don't know if you listen to Bigger Pockets, but every once in a while, they'll talk about South Bend as being a cash flow market. And so weirdly, my own backyard was a pretty hot area to invest in.
Yeah. That's awesome. Have you looked in other areas or looked out of the state to invest, or are you just focusing solely on South Bend?
Right now, I'm focusing solely on my local market. Yeah. Would love to expand geographically at some point, but I've had some success here, and so I'm just going to stay for now. Yeah. When I first started, I didn't even think of looking locally, which is ironic. I was looking everywhere. First started in Indianapolis, then Cincinnati, and kind of moved to multiple cities and looking around. And then my friend's a realtor, and he was like, hey, there's some decent homes here in South Bend. I'm like, oh, okay. So I look and I'm like, dang, like, why wasn't I looking here all along? But I was ignorant to it.
Well, that's awesome. It's so great to have such a good market right in your backyard, and certainly probably make some things easier for you. And just the ability to know immediately, is this a good deal or not, is such a huge game changer for folks. So that's awesome. What's the real estate kind of end goal for you? Or what do you think's next for you from a real estate perspective?
Gosh, end goal, man. I'm 35. You're a young guy too. So like, kind of think what the end goal is way out there. And it's, I don't know. I'm just going to keep going, keep plugging along. You always hear these like stories of people owning 500 units or 1,000. Like, sounds awesome. I don't know if I'll ever get there. Odds are against me for sure. But the plan for now is just to keep acquiring steady, but surely. I'm going to keep working, obviously, as a private practice rad for at least 10, 15 more years at least, and just keep acquiring. And if I'm lucky, what I would love to happen would be do 50-50, something like work part-time as rad and part-time spend half my time doing real estate investing. I mean, that would be great, but it's hard to know where your success will be over, you know, the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Well, you're crushing it already too in a short time frame. So I think you're going to get there sooner than you think in regards to... Yeah, as long as the wife keeps making some good bonuses, though. So
that's where it's at, man. You got to find a wife. Yeah. You can steal all her money. Yeah.
There you go. That's awesome. Right. Good deal. Yeah. Do you think you're going to stick with a single family and small multifamily, or you think at some point you'll make a change and jump into more commercial? What's the thought process on that?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to do larger multifamily and commercial even. I just haven't found it yet, honestly. Yeah. I've found something that works, and so I'm kind of going full steam ahead with that. But I'm hoping that my real estate career will guide me to larger multifamily. I mean, I think that's everybody's kind of goal. You'd love to own a 12 unit, 20 unit. So yes, I'm eventually that would be my goal, but I'm just kind of learning as I go and trying to climb higher each year.
Yeah. Well, right now it's working for you for sure. You got a good thing going. How do you balance being a radiologist, having two kids, being married? How do you find time to invest in real estate?
It's tough, man, because I'm definitely full-time or full-time plus, right? Yeah. I mean, private practice is so busy. But I'm pretty lucky in that as a radiologist, I can kind of leverage that time. I sit in front of a computer all day, right? So I don't do a lot of my real estate at work, but if I have to, I can, right? I can send emails. I can make phone calls when I have to. All those little issues that might come up, I can handle. One of my good friends is a neurosurgeon here in South Bend, and he always he likes to hear about like the real estate and the real estate investing. And I'm like, don't do it, man. Like, you can't be in the, not that you couldn't do it, but to be in an OR, like you're less accessible. So that's one way. My job allows me, thankfully, to maximize that leverage. But yeah, with the kids, one thing I like about real estate is that it kind of shows them me. They see me working. They see me investing. And they're kind of, you know, learning in the background. I've got two boys. They're 6 and 3. And my oldest, he will mock my real estate investing all the time. He calls it real estates. He puts an S on the end.
So that's awesome.
He's like, are you buying more real estates? And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm going to. But they'll come with me to the properties. They'll see the properties. They see me working. Every once in a blue moon, I'll actually try to fix something in one of my properties. So they see that. So it definitely bleeds into your personal life. But for me, as I'm sure you, it's a hobby. Yep. And that's how I manage it. It is my hobby.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, it's really cool too, I'm sure, for the boys to see you working in the business side of things as well. And they're going to pick up so much from you over the years that who knows, maybe they'll take over the low empire, the low real estate empire at some point in the future, or at least learn the value of hard work and property management side of things and so forth as well, and see how things run. That can be really beneficial. Do you guys manage these properties on your own, or do you have a property manager who runs them for you?
Yeah, so we have an Airbnb locally that's kind of attached to Notre Dame. Notre Dame's an Airbnb market. And so I do manage that. It's kind of hit or miss. And whether or not I would recommend someone managing their own Airbnb. This is one thing I struggle with that all physicians, I think, have to look at is time management. Like, is it worth my time to manage this Airbnb when I make good money per hour as a radiologist? And I struggle with that kind of frequently. I was like, is this really worth my time?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do manage the Airbnb. The long-term rentals, the two that are up and running currently, are managed by my property manager. I do have a local property manager that I have. Now, you know, for a physician, I probably recommend property management for pretty much most physicians, just because of that time trade-off. I think your average everyday investor to pay $250 a month to a property manager may be a little bit more for them than they should spend. But for us, as physicians, I would typically recommend property management.
The return on time is so important, and something I'm learning all the time too. Yeah. And it's helpful, I think, to figure out, what is your hourly rate, if you will, or what is your time worth? And then think about all those tasks that you're doing that someone else could do for way cheaper. I'm a super frugal person and I'm still working on that. And it took a long time for me just to be willing to just let someone mow my lawn. I'm like, I don't want to pay $25 to a kid down the street to mow the lawn. I can just do it myself, but it's not worth my time at all. And it's not worth the hour of time lost that I don't get with my son and with my wife. And so once I realized that, that was kind of a big mindset shift for me. And so, if it's not a good return on time for me, then I'm totally fine with giving that to someone else to do. And I think that is helpful to help you scale your business as well, but also so important for your family life as well.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed. Yeah,
for sure. Well, that's awesome. Well, cool. So it sounds like you got a lot of things in the works at this point. You got the Subject 2 deal to get wrapped up. You got the appraisal coming up with a duplex. A lot of exciting things coming up, it sounds like, in the next few months.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Excited for you. Well, before we wrap things up here, where can people get a hold of you if they want to reach out and learn more?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, just Tom Lowe, L-O-W-E, and Instagram. My Instagram handle is T, and then P as in Paul, and Lowe, L-O-W-E, 88, T-P Lowe, 88. So that's where people can reach out to me.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll put those links in the show notes there and definitely encourage folks to reach out to you. Well, is there anything, any parting shots that you have before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I think for physicians, since that's our kind of audience, just taking the dive. Yeah. You got to take a stab at it. One of my good friends, he said, you just got to get in the ring at some point, is how he described it. And it's true. You do. It's scary. But once you take that leap, it gets easier. And I look at it as like climbing a mountain. It's kind of cliche, but it really is. You just one day at a time and you just take it in stride.
Yeah, absolutely. Then you look back and you're like, holy cow, I'm already at the peak, or look how far I've climbed in this journey, which is so awesome. Well, excited to follow along with your journey. Thanks again for your time and coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, with that, it's been Dr. Tom Lowe and Dr. Alex Schlow with another episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. Signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance, and talk to you on the next episode. Please note that the information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.